God is building a great nation, and we're looking at step 9. That is the settling of the land. They have people, they have leadership, they have a way of life, a culture, a law. Now they've moved into the land in step 8. We saw them conquering the land and dividing it up. And then step 9, which takes hundreds of years, they settle on the land, and it doesn't go well. Everyone did that which was right in his own eyes. There's a form of tribalism. It's not a nation, it's a confederation of tribes. And we've been seeing that. Now what we see is the deterioration of the spiritual life of the people. The Lord brought judges forth. They were local, occasional, and temporary. But they couldn't really seem to hold the people together, certainly not spiritually. And in our last session, we talked about the state of the Confederacy. What kind of state was it in? What's happening there? What characterizes it? And in our first flashback in Judges 17 and 18, we heard the story of Micah and the Danites in Judges 17 and 18. A gross immorality, people who just casually worshiping idols. And the world we saw in that flashback was a cruel world, a hard place, an ungodly, idolatrous, might makes right, dog-eat-dog society. Then we had a second flashback in Judges 19 to 21, the Levite, his concubine, and the Benjaminites. And there we saw just gross immorality, a wicked, violent, and perverse society which did not seem to have any understanding of what it is that God wanted, or at least there's virtually no talk of the Lord and what He wants from His people. So gross idolatry, gross immorality. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as he saw fit. In those days, Israel had no king. And there's an implication here. They not only didn't have a king, that they didn't have anything that held them together, either the law or government, certainly no national government. There's a third flashback, and it takes place in Judges chapter 22 to 25. Now, the chapter, Judges chapter 22, begins in the days when the judges ruled. Now, by this time, some of you are asking questions. Just a minute. Dr. Lehman, I have a question. My Bible does not have a Judges 22 or 23 or 24 or 25. So what's this about a third flashback in Judges 22 to 25? Now, if you haven't caught that, you just weren't quite paying attention. You know, perhaps almost snuck that one past you. What do I mean, Judges 22 to 25? Well, in the days when the judges ruled is the first line of the book of Ruth. And my point, of course, is that Ruth is a story that takes place during the time of the judges, just as the story of Micah and his family altar, just as the story of the Levite and his concubine. The story of Ruth is another flashback from this period of time. In the days when the judges ruled, flashback number 3, Ruth the Moabitess. The Moabitess. Edersheim, the Jewish Christian historian, said, "There's so much romance has been thrown about the simple narrative of this book as almost to lose sight of its real purpose." It's a romantic book. It's a love story. And Edersheim says, "There's so much romance we may miss the real purpose of this book." Well, there is romance in the book of Ruth. It's a lovely book. But the central purpose of this book is, well, that's what we're going to see during this session. God is preparing something through a, but, well, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We want to see what the purpose is, what God is preparing and what he's working through. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as he saw fit. In those days, Israel had no king. In those days, Israel had no king. In those days, Israel had no king, and everyone did as he saw fit. You understand, that even bad government is better than no government. Where there's no government, might makes right and perversity just takes over. And we are seeing Israel coming very, very close to total chaos. But God is going to prepare a king. And in this flashback, in the book of Ruth, we're going to see God at work remedying the situation. There was no king in the land. Everybody did pretty well what they pleased. It begins with a husband and wife from Bethlehem. There's two Bethlehems in Palestine, and so we talk about Bethlehem Ephrathah. It's the Bethlehem that we know from the Christmas story. They were of the tribe of Judah, and there was a famine in the land. And so they went down into the land of Moab. That is, they went south and east and curved around the bottom of the Dead Sea and up into the land of the Moabites. The man was named Elimelech and his wife Naomi. When they got down there, God blessed Elimelech and Naomi with two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, and blessed them with two daughters-in-law, although they were Moabites, but their name were Orpah and Ruth. But for 10 years, Orpah and Ruth had no children. They were barren. Does that ring a bell? Have we seen a lot of barren women through the scripture? And then Elimelech dies. And so does Mahlon and Chilion. We don't have any detail. But here is this terrible tragedy. Naomi loses her husband, loses her two adult sons, and there are no grandchildren. And so she starts thinking, I have to go back home. She starts moving for home. She gets a little way, and she's got her two daughters-in-law with them. And she says, girls, there's no sense you going with me. I'm like a dead person. And you stay here, and may the Lord will bless you and give you some nice new husbands and children. And so Orpah kisses her mother-in-law and goes back. But the other daughter, Chilion's wife, Ruth, she says, no, I am not going. Where you go, I am going. Where you stay, I'm going to stay. Your God is going to be my God, and where you die, I'm going to die. And Naomi says, no, you can't. She says, I am determined. I'm going to do that. But Naomi that's the only bright spot in Naomi's life at this point. In fact, her name, Naomi, means my delight, and she's not feeling that at all. She says, my name is now Mara, which means bitter. I'm a bitter woman. The Lord, El Shaddai, who is supposed to take care of his people, has brought me back to my own people empty-handed. He's afflicted me and brought me misfortune. I have no husband, no sons, and no name, which means that the family is dying out. And all the inheritance of her husband is lost because there's no children to pass the legal right to the land. And so Naomi, or bitter Mara, and Ruth the Moabitess make their way back down around the edge of the Dead Sea, back up into Judea to the town of Bethlehem. And when they come there, it's Naomi and Ruth the Moabitess. Seven times in this very short book, four short chapters, seven times we are reminded that Ruth is a Moabitess, a Moabitess, a Moabitess, a Moabitess, a Moabitess, a Moabitess, a Moabitess. What in the world is a Moabitess? Well, Moab was the son of Lot. And he went over and settled in that area that I've told you about near the Dead Sea. And there's always been conflict between Moab, the Moabites, and Israel. When Israel was moving out of the wilderness, it were the Moabites that said, you can't pass through our country. They were not allowed to use the so-called King's Highway to move up. And Joshua, I think, wanted to fight the Moabites, but the Lord said, no, no, just go around these people. It was in the wilderness that the Moabite king Balak called on the prophet Balaam to curse God's people. Instead, a donkey cursed him. It was Eglon, who was the Moabite king, who had taken over some of the tribes and was oppressing them, and a left-handed Benjaminite judge stuck him in the belly with that sword. This is not just a Gentile. Ruth is going back home with no husband, no sons, no grandchildren, no name, and a Moabitess woman. Well, when they arrive there, it's the time for the barley harvest. And there is provision in the law for poor people to be able to go out into the fields and take some things from the corners of the field at the days of the harvest, and to follow behind the threshers as they go through and harvest, and to walk behind and pick up the gleanings, the leavings. And so Ruth goes out there, and she's working hard. She's staying on task, trying to get some food to help herself and Naomi. And then the scriptures say that it just so happened. It's hard to translate this. It's sort of, this happened, kind of happened to happen. It happened to happen that she was gleaning in the fields of one Boaz. Now, that's important because Boaz was of the family, the same clan as Elimelech. And the reason that's important is, well, because they had a part of the Old Testament law was that a kinsman, that is somebody who's a close relative, could step in and redeem the property of one of these people who had died. And through his wife, it's complicated business. Apparently, Elimelech has lost all his money. But the land is still, he's entitled to it, but somebody's going to have to pay for it. Somebody has to be a kinsman redeemer to redeem the property and the inheritance and to give a name to his descendants. Well, that's Moab. And Moab sees this woman working hard, and he's attracted to her. He's attracted to her, I think, mainly by character. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. And he says some nice things to her, and he says to the guys, you know, let her get some water here. She needs it. Make sure she gets some food. And look, why don't you drop a few little extra pieces of barley so she can pick up plenty? So she goes home with this big pile of barley, and when she gets home, and Naomi sees it. Naomi says, what's going on? Blessed be the Lord. Wow. And she said, yeah, I was gleaning in the field of a guy named Boaz, and he took a real interest in me. And Naomi, wow, oh, blessed be the Lord. There's really something happening here. She said, he is a near kinsman. If he wanted to, he could redeem our name in Israel. Wow, blessed be the Lord. And so she says, look, you know, when they spend the night out at the threshing area, you go over and, well, here's what happened. Ruth got herself dressed as best she could for gleaning and put a little perfume on. And when she went over, and when Boaz was asleep, she went over and lifted the blanket off his feet. Now, there you are sleeping and somebody takes the blanket off your feet. What's going to happen? Feet are going to get cold. You're going to wake up. What's wrong here? And that's what happened. And that way, Ruth was able to have a private conversation with Boaz when everybody else was sleeping. I guess she could have gone over and kicked him in the ribs, but then he might have been pretty loud and woke up a lot of people. And they have this conversation, and she reminds him that she is from that family, and that perhaps Boaz would be interested in being the kinsman redeemer for Naomi, and he is interested. But he says, but there's somebody who's a closer relative than I, and I've got to go talk to that person and see if we can work it out. And so he goes and he finds this closer relative. He says, Do you know that you're the kinsman redeemer? You can be for Ruth and her mother, Naomi, you know, tribe of Elimelech, a clan. Are you interested? The guy said, yeah, I'd be very interested in that. But then he finds out about, I guess, this debt on the property, and he thinks, well, I don't think I'm up to doing this, because if I do this redeemer, this will put my own financial situation, maybe make it a little rocky. I could lose what I have. It's too much of a financial risk. Boaz is happy to hear that. And he then goes to the elders. And he says to the elders, I want to declare that I will be the kinsman redeemer for Ruth and Naomi. And I will take responsibility for the property and the debts. And I want to marry Ruth. It's a wonderful love story. This is a story about two barren women, Ruth and Naomi. Well, Ruth was barren for 10 years. She didn't have any children. And she came to Israel without a child. Naomi had no more sons, had no grandchildren, was too old to get remarried. And she was worried that the name of her husband and that inheritance would disappear from the land. So after Ruth and Boaz get together, we read in chapter 4, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Ruth gave birth to a son. And then we read, may the Lord, this is the people at the gate, the rulers. They say to Boaz, may the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who built the house of Israel. Now, you may remember that from our earlier step. It was nobody's talking here about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And it was Rachel and Leah who built the house of Israel. What do you suppose they meant, that the Lord would make this woman coming into your house like Rachel and Leah? What were they really praying? What was their, I think they were saying, let's have some children. Let's have some heirs. Both of whom built the house of Israel, and may you achieve wealth in Ephrathah and become famous in Bethlehem. And the women said to Naomi, the women crowd around Naomi and say, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer. May he become famous and be to you a restorer of life and sustainer of your old age. He's talking about the child. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and is better to you than seven sons, has given birth to him. Then Naomi took the child as her own. And the neighborhood women gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi. That's why I said a few moments ago that this is a story of two barren women bearing one child. Because Ruth has a child, but so does Naomi. Wow. And so they named him Obed. And he's the father of Jesse, the father of David. He's the father of Jesse, the father of David. Do you remember, there was no king in the land. But there would be, and God is at work. There is romance in the book of Ruth. It's a wonderful love story. But the central purpose, going back to those blanks we left, the central purpose is political. That is that God says, I'm going to make of you a great nation. And they weren't turning out to be a great nation. They may have been growing in numbers, but each person did what was right in their own eyes. This time of the Confederacy, of the fragmentation, of the decline of society, gross idolatry, gross immorality. This was not the way to have a great nation. And the Lord is designing and preparing a king. And he does it by bringing the Moabitess woman. She's not the first outsider. When you think of those women who came in and were part of the line that ended up marrying David, but in the name of the Lord Jesus, his Jesus' ancestors. I mean, a great Mother's Day message would be, let us speak about these famous mothers. Tamar, she ended up getting her father-in-law to have sex with her? Tamar? And Rahab, you know who she was. And Ruth the Moabitess, and you want to throw Bathsheba in there for good measure? That's a great Mother's Day message, right? Mothers that God used. Well, God is using. He's using a good one, though, in this Ruth. She's a lovely woman. And he is preparing a king to work. God is at work. Now, listen. God is preparing a king. This is a political book as well as romantic book. And he's preparing the king through a godly remnant. We started out by talking about the state of the Confederation. And we reiterated that it was gross idolatry and that there was gross immorality. But if you'll look at your little graphic for this section, down in the lower right hand, there's a little tiny bright spot. What we're saying is that in the midst of this nation, cruel, hard, ungodly, idolatrous, might makes right, dog eat dog, wicked, violent, perverse society. In the midst of this, there is a godly remnant, God's people. And they are neat people. First of all, they are really nice people. And you know, after we've had all the stuff we've had in the book of Judges, and the kind of people they were, it was hard to find anybody to be sympathetic with in that book. And we have Naomi. There's a kindness to Naomi. She tells the girls, don't follow me. Go home and may the Lord bless you with a husband. And she gives them a kiss and sends them on their way. And talk about nice people. How about Ruth? This Ruth... Oh, I'm going to go where you go, I'm going to go. She's not going to desert her mother-in-law in her bitterness and emptiness. She's going to stick with her. And she's a hard-working woman. When she's out in the field, she works steadily. Boaz recognized this. He thought, boy, this is a woman with a lot of character. I don't know that the perfume helped a lot, but the character did a lot. And talk about nice people. How about Boaz? He shows appreciation to Ruth. He says, you know, I really appreciate what you've done for your mother-in-law and how you've left your own people and come here and you work in the fields. And he comforted her that way. And he was a generous guy. I mean, he made sure she had some water. He made sure she had food. He was so kind to her. And, of course, he offered her protection. He said, I'll make sure nobody touches you. None of those men will try to touch you. He's a man of integrity. He says, I'm going to go and check this other kinsman redeemer. And then sort of the ultimate generosity, he gave his own life and he risked his fortune. He was ready to put up financially for this. This is a nice guy. They're not only nice guys, but they're godly people. They're people, well, all through chapter 1, verse 8, it talks about the Lord's kindness. The word kindness that appears a few times through the book of Ruth, the word kindness is an Old Testament word, hesed. It's loving kindness, unfailing love of God. In fact, we sing and speak about hesed love in the Old Testament, unfailing love of God, the unfailing kindness. And when hesed is translated in the New Testament, for example, John 1:14, the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace. That's the Old Testament word hesed, grace, full of grace and truth. And... Chapter 1, verse 16, your God will be my God. chapter 1, verse 17. May the Lord deal with these people. Talked as if God was real in their lives. Chapter 1, verse 20. Even in her pain, there's a godly aspect, because Naomi says, well, the Lord, El Shaddai, the Lord, well, how come I just feel so cut off from things? In chapter 2, verse 4, Boaz shows up to work, and he says to the working crew, the Lord be with you. And they say back, the Lord bless you. Now, there is good employer-employee relationships. Do you see how different this is than the world of Micah and the Danites and the world of the Levite and the concubine and the Benjaminites? This is an entirely different world. The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you. Chapter 2, verse 12. The Lord repay you for your kindness, for your goodness. Chapter 2, verse 20. The Lord. Chapter 3, verse 10. The Lord bless you for your kindness, your hesed, your loving kindness. Chapter 3, verse 13. As surely as the Lord lives, Boaz said, I'm going to follow up on this, Ruth. Sure, you can count on it. I swear in the name of the Lord. Wow. May the Lord do this. May the Lord make the woman who is coming in your house like Rachel and Leah, who built the house of Israel. Chapter 4, verse 12. Through the offspring, listen, that the Lord gives you. The Lord does it. He brings children into the world. Wow. Chapter 4, verse 14, praise the Lord, blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a redeemer, kinsman redeemer. From beginning to end, God is here. And what a contrast, what a tremendous contrast to the wicked, evil, cruel, godless, idolatrous, perverse culture in which they were living and where God was forgotten. Now, look, I need to remind you that the central part of this book is that God is preparing a king. This is another step as God moves towards building a great nation. But I also want to let you know that I think we can learn about what kind of people we ought to be as we live in a wicked culture. We've got to be the godly remnant. We've got to be the salt, the light, the bright spot. We become too preoccupied with other people. And oh, what they're going to do, and isn't this awful, and oh my, oh dear. What we have to do is we have to remember that we have a responsibility. In every situation, there's always one person you can do something directly about. You can't usually do anything directly about other. You can try to influence other people, but you can't make anybody be what you want them to be. You can try to influence, but you can't make them be. And sometimes we live in a society which is evil and corrupt, perverse, but there is somebody we can do something about. And there's a beautiful thing happening there in Bethlehem. Oh, that's great. And of course, there's not only a beautiful thing happening in Bethlehem, but there is a little boy born, and his name is Obed, and he's the father of Jesse, the father of David. And eventually that line's going to go up, and you and I in December may sing, O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. And the son of that comes out of that union of Ruth and Boaz is going to be the Christ child.